I guess it looks as if you're reorganizing your records.
Yeah.
Chronological?
No.
Not alphabetical?
Nope.
What?
Autobiographical.
That sounds...
comforting.
Yes.
For the Record on Nova 103.5. Today's For the Record is inspired by Netflix, of all things. Well, sort of. The other day, Netflix asked me if I want to continue watching the Queen movie, Bohemian Rhapsody. Only, I don't recall ever starting the movie. I asked my girlfriend, and nope, she didn't start it either. So who knows, someone else might be accessing my profile, maybe it's ghosts in the machine, or maybe we just don't remember. But I did feel the need to go on a bit of a Queen bender after that. My name is Jacques, and welcome to For the Record, a show where I do a deep dive on the records that make up my vinyl collection. Spinning today, guitarist Brian May, drummer Roger Taylor, bassist John Deacon, and on vocals, the one and only Freddie Mercury. Queen, A Night at the Opera. I mean, come on, it's that Queen album with that Queen song. And if you've watched the film and you base your history of Queen off of that, well, sit down. Uncle Jacques will give you some of the real information and how it actually happened. The fourth album from Queen, the band had already gotten their commercial success, mainly due to the single Killer Queen off their previous album. She's a killer queen, gunpowder gelatine, dynamite with a laser beam. So, what's to be expected after releasing a song like Killer Queen? Champagne, large parties, mansions, chandeliers, fur coats, Rolls Royces. I don't know what wealthy people do with their money. I'm far from wealthy, because you know, I collect records. But actually, Queen themselves were also very far from being wealthy. In fact, before recording their fourth album, Night at the Opera, the boys in the band were kind of broke. But why? You're Queen. Well, anyone wanting to start a band out there, what's the most important thing? Maybe songwriting, maybe practicing, maybe building up your live shows. All of those are wrong. The number one thing to do when you start a band is read your contracts. Queen had signed a bit of a weird contract. They would produce albums for a production company, and then the production company would go on to sell the album to a record label. Queen saw almost none of the money they earned, as the production company paid them a weekly fee of £60. There were no mansions, instead there were small one-bedroom flats, places that were falling apart and houses with water issues. The money issue reached a turning point when Queen bassist John Deacon, who had recently gotten married, was denied a cash advance of £4,000 by manager Norman Sheffield to put a deposit on a house. This increasing frustration led Freddie Mercury to write the song Death on Two Legs, which would serve as the opening track to A Night at the Opera. Queen's Brian May and Roger Taylor.
There's a sense of humour to it, but with Freddie there was a lot of anger there.
He was very aggrieved at our management at the time, who he felt didn't respect him, hadn't paid him, had stolen from him, you know, whatever. And he wanted to put it down on record.
Freddie did not mince his words. The opening lines, "You suck my blood like a leech, you break the law and you breach, screw my brain till it hurts, you've taken all my money and you want more."
I think even we were a bit taken aback with the, with how vicious Freddie wanted it to be. I remember thinking, oh, it was what Freddie wanted, you know, and the kind of unwritten law was that the author of the song got his own way.
Interesting perspective on who had what to say in Queen, which was backed up by Freddie Mercury himself.
Sometimes you just disagree. And in the end, what does happen is the writer is the boss, because he can say in the end, look, this is the way I want the song, and this is the way I'm going to have it.
Being absolutely screwed over by the record label and fed up with it, the opening track of Queen's A Night at the Opera, Death on Two Legs.
Blood. can kiss my ass goodbye.
Feel good. Are you satisfied? Do you feel like suicide?
You should your conscience all right? Does it plague you at night?
Do you feel good? Feel
on Two Legs, the opening track of today's For the Record, Queen, A Night at the Opera. The band's funds were running low, and they needed someone who was going to help them with the business side of things, and actually be in their corner. So they started looking for new management. Three names were shortlisted, and among them was Peter Grant, Led Zeppelin's manager. One of the others, Elton John's manager, John Reed. Here's Queen's Brian May.
We agreed that we would go with John Reed as our manager. And John Reed's plan, you know, because we said, you know, how do we get out of this? His plan was, okay, boys, I will deal with the financial situation. You guys go back in the studio and make the best album you've ever made.
So that's what the band did. From August 1975 until November 1975, Queen recorded A Night at the Opera at seven different recording studios. It was listed as the most expensive album ever made at the time, estimated around £40,000, or about £350,000 in 2023. Or if you really want to go there, $8.5 million Namibian dollars. The film Bohemian Rhapsody is pretty bad at keeping actual tabs on the exact history of the band and what happened, but one thing I found funny in the film was the constant fun poking at Queen drummer Roger Taylor and his song, I'm In Love With My Car.
I put my heart and soul into this song.
No one is disputing that.
And you don't like it because you want your songs on the album.
It's not that, Roger.
And what is it?
I'm in love with my car.
Maybe it's not strong enough?
What does that even mean, not strong?
No, I'm late. What did I miss?
Discussing Roger's castle.
When my hand's on your grease gun, that's very subtle,
isn't it? It's a metaphor, Brian.
It's just a bit weird, Roger. What exactly are you doing with that car?
Jokes from the film aside, the song actually did cause a bit of frustration within the band, and the band having a seriously moment, it happened. Roger Taylor.
And I remember turning around to Brian and I said, what do you think of that? He looked at me and he said, you are joking, aren't you? And you are joking. And I said, no, Brian, I'm deadly serious. You know, it's about a car and somebody who's in love with it.
When it came time to choose a first single for the album, the obvious choice, I mean, come on, Bohemian Rhapsody, that goes without saying. But Roger Taylor, he wanted his song. Did you know, like a child would have done, Roger Taylor locked himself in a cupboard until the rest of Queen agreed that the B-side to Bohemian Rhapsody would be I'm In Love With My Car. But was it the song or was it the money that Roger Taylor loved? The B-side decision would later become the cause of much internal friction within the band, in that while it was only a B-side, it generated an equal amount of publishing royalties for Roger Taylor as the main single did for Freddie Mercury, simply because it was the B-side to Bohemian Rhapsody. I am sorry, there is in no world, in no universe, any time where this song deserved as much credit as Bohemian Rhapsody. I'm telling you, those drummers, sneaky, sneaky ones. Of today's choice on For the Record, the B-side to Bohemian Rhapsody, here's Queen, I'm In Love With My Car.
Ooh.
For the record on Nova 103.5. For the record on Nova 103.5.
It's the best collection I've ever seen.
I wouldn't doubt it.
You know, I can only afford to buy just a few of these.
Give me 50 bucks and they're all yours.
My name is Jacques and welcome back to For the Record. Spinning today, Queen, A Night at the Opera. Bohemian Rhapsody is coming up. Such an iconic song used in movies and films, but I think another Queen song might have it beat for film and TV usage. Heart in Cleveland, Will and Grace, EastEnders, My Name is Earl, The King of Queens, Good Omens, The Breakup, I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry, The Simpsons, Shaun of the Dead, Peter's Friends, The Secret Life of Pets, Family Guy, the list goes on. Queen, You're My Best Friend. And if you're unsure, here's that iconic intro. Now you might know which song I'm talking about. The song was written by Queen bassist John Deacon.
He didn't write that many, but you know, if you think about it, Another One Bites the Dust, You're My Best Friend, I Want to Break Free, big, big hits. And You're My Best Friend is still one of the most played tracks on American radio.
So here's John Deacon himself saying something very important about the Queen songwriting process.
The person who's written the song tends to be the one person who sees that one song all the way through, from the idea they have in their head at first, you know, the final production, you know, the sounds on everything and the mix.
And this was very important for the song You're My Best Friend. Freddie Mercury played piano, as in the classic version thereof, the percussive instrument. You're My Best Friend is electric piano. Freddie wasn't having it, so John Deacon had to step in and Freddie backed it up.
I didn't like the electric piano, so I took it home and I started to, because I never played piano before, and I really started to learn on the electric piano, and basically that's a song that came out, you know, when I was learning to play piano.
I refused to play the damn thing.
What was this, a question of ethics or what?
Tinny and horrible. I don't like them. Why play those things when you've got a lovely, super grand piano? No, I think it's... Basically, what he's trying to say is that there was a desired effect, really, in that.
It was written on that instrument, and really it sounds best on that, you know, on the instrument that you wrote a song on.
John wrote the song for his wife, Veronica, married in 1975 and still together to this day. Another large thing about the song was the vocal harmonies. Roger Taylor.
We all had different qualities in our voices, and I had a sort of high, searing quality. Freddie had an incredibly powerful quality in most ranges, and Brian had a very nice quality in the lower range, and so the three made a very good combination.
It really is amazing. I absolutely admire Queen for their vocal harmonies. Of today's For the Record, here's Queen, You're My Best Friend.
Make me live. Oh, you
You're My Best Friend by Queen off their album and today's choice, and for the record, A Night at the Opera. But Queen wasn't all rock and pop. A ballad could be written with the best of them, and one of Queen's best songs off today's choice, their album A Night at the Opera, just so happens to be a ballad. In interviews, Freddie Mercury has denied that this song was about anyone, though any Queen fan worth their salt knows it could only be about Mary Austin. Mary was Freddie Mercury's girlfriend from about a year before Queen had formed up until 1976, when Freddie told her of his sexuality. At the time, they were staying together and Mary moved out. But nothing had changed though. Even after the breakup, Mary was still the love of Freddie's life.
Yes, to me it was a marriage. She's my common law wife. We carry on now as like we were married. So it's marriage is a term for other people. We believed in each other and everybody else.
When Freddie Mercury passed away, he left his home, Garden Lodge, and the adjoining Mews, as well as 50% of all privately owned shares, including 50% of his music royalties, to Mary Austin. Freddie was cremated, and his ashes were given to Mary with clear instructions.
I know exactly where I want you to put me. And, but no one's to know, because I don't want anyone to dig me up.
To this day, no one but Mary Austin knows where Freddie Mercury's ashes were scattered. Of today's For the Record, Queen's A Night at the Opera, a song of course written by Freddie for Mary, and if you haven't guessed it yet, Love of My Life. Coming up, Bohemian Rhapsody.
Love of my life, you've hurt me. You've broken my heart, and now you of my life, can't you see? Bring it back, don't take it away from me, because you don't know what it means to me.
On Nova 103.5. You're tuned to For the Record, only on Nova 103.5.
Yes, She's here. Bring it to me now. Thank you, Phil.
Why'd you get it sent here?
Carla wouldn't approve. She thinks it's dumb to spend $600 on an LP. Well,
Carla's right. Why don't you just spend $13 on a CD, man?
My name is Jacques, and welcome back to For the Record. Spinning today, Queen, A Night at the Opera. Released on the 21st of November 1975, A Night at the Opera has to this day, 48 years later, continued to be something. Something amazing, something epic, something beautiful. When last did you see a greatest albums of all time or greatest songs of all time list that A Night at the Opera or Bohemian Rhapsody wasn't part of? Exactly, it doesn't happen. It's always on the list, and for good reason. Is your air guitar tuned? Then let's get started. The biggest song of Queen's career, the third best-selling single of all time in the UK, the most streamed song of the 20th century, and inducted into the Grammy Hall of Fame. Bohemian Rhapsody. The story is, Freddie Mercury first started developing Bohemian Rhapsody way back in the late 1960s. He used to play parts of the songs he was writing at the time on the piano. One of the pieces was simply known as the Cowboy Song, which, if you hear the lyrics, kind of sound cowboyish. Mama just killed a man. I know he does it very operatic, but I can see it now. Mama, I just killed a man. Cowboy. There's a scene in the film Bohemian Rhapsody when the boys in Queen are recording the song, and this happens.
Oh, and then there's the operatic section. You're gonna love it.
The operatic section.
I know, it sounds crazy, I don't know, it could be a flop, it could work.
I love it.
What have we got to lose?
Nothing.
This actually happened, but the people and the time frame are off though. It was in 1972, a few years before they recorded the song, and it wasn't with the band, it was with producer Roy Thomas Baker. He told the tale of how Freddie once played the opening ballad section on the piano for him at his flat. He said he played the beginning on the piano, then stopped and said, "And this is where the opera section comes in." And then we went out for dinner. See, I told you, I'd correct a thing here or there for the film. Nothing against the film, great movie, and I understand they had to Hollywood it. One thing that was quite accurate with the film were the parts where they show you how hard it was to get Bohemian Rhapsody done.
You want a few trade secrets? It was quite a mammoth task because it was basically done in three definite sections and just pieced together. And each one required a lot of concentration. The opera section in the middle was the most taxing, I think, because we wanted to recreate a sort of huge operatic sort of harmony section between just the three of us. And that involves a lot of multi-tracking and things. And I think between the three of us, we recreated a sort of 160 to 200 piece
something
choir
like, yeah.
effect between just the three of us, as Brian, Roger, and myself.
There's a tremendous range of harmonies, yes. And it involves doing it again and again and again and again to make it sound bigger and bigger and bigger. Mm.
Can you think how many times to get that number of people?
Well, divide 200 by 3.
Can you imagine doing the same thing over 200 times, just at different pitches and harmonies? The operatic section of Bohemian Rhapsody took 3 weeks to record.
Galileo! Galileo Figaro!
How was that?
Higher.
If I go any higher, only dogs will hear me.
Galileo! Galileo! Galileo Figaro!
How was that?
Better? Higher.
How many more Galileos do you want?
Though not as 100% properly portrayed in the film, Bohemian Rhapsody, the movie, did get another part of the song correct. It was too long as a single.
And as for Bohemian
Rhapsody.
What is that?
It's an epic poem.
It goes on forever, 6 bloody minutes.
I pity your wife if you think 6 minutes is forever. And you know what? We're going to release it as our single.
Not possible. Anything over 3 minutes and the radio stations won't program it. What about I'm in love with my car?
The I'm in love with my car joke. Well done. What actually happened was the song was played to various studio executives as well as other musicians, and well, all of them said, you'll have no hope of getting it on the radio. Cue the hero of the day, a radio DJ.
So what have we got today for us? Have we got a little taste of the new record?
I'm really not supposed to.
Oh, forbidden fruit, don't tempt me. Oh, I'm in love with my car.
Other side.
Well done again, the I'm in love with my car joke. That was Kenny Everett, or at least an actor portraying him in the film Bohemian Rhapsody. Kenny was a British radio DJ, and he is actually credited to some of the success of the song. The band took a copy of Bohemian Rhapsody to Kenny and said they'll only give it to him if he promises not to play it. He said, of course he wouldn't, wink wink. Kenny Everett played Bohemian Rhapsody 14 times in his show over the course of the next 2 days, becoming the first person to ever play the song on radio. He was very influential in getting the song out to the masses. And without him, who knows what would have happened? I don't doubt the song would have become popular, like many other non-single Queen songs. But what it became? I don't think there is a single other song in the history of music that has the same legacy as Bohemian Rhapsody. In fact, I'm confident in saying, as a kid, I knew Bohemian Rhapsody before I knew the song Happy Birthday. My name is Jacques, and thank you for joining me today on For the Record, where we swooned over Queen's album, A Night at the Opera. Ending today's show, the biggest song of Queen's career, the third best-selling single of all time in the UK, the most streamed song of the 20th century, inducted into the Grammy Hall of Fame, and of course, used in that iconic Wayne's World scene.
This is my best friend, Garth Elgar.
Hi.
I think we'll go with a little Bohemian Rhapsody, gentlemen.
Good call.
Here's Queen, Bohemian Rhapsody.
Caught in a landslide, no escape from reality. Open your eyes, look up to the skies and see.
I'm just a poor boy, I need no sympathy.
Because I'm easy come, easy go. Little high, little low.
Anyway, the wind blows
doesn't really matter to me.
To me. Mama just killed a man, put a gun against.
Nobody loves me.
He's just a poor boy from a poor family.
is sparing his life from this monstrosity.
Easy come, easy go, will you let me go?
Bismillah, no, we will not let you go.
Let him go!
Bismillah, we will not let you go.
Let him go!
Bismillah, we will not let you go.
Let me go!
We'll not let you go.
Let me go!
We'll not let you go.
Let me go! Mamma mia, mamma mia.
Mamma mia, let me go. Beelzebub has a devil put aside for me. For me.
For the record on Nova 103.5.